Good afternoon. It's 5 o'clock on a Tuesday, May the 18th, here in London, England, on halfway around the world, not as far away as he used to live, but halfway around the world, but from deepest Greater Manchester originally and fan of a not very well-known football team, is my good friend Mark Rowland. I'm sure we'll get into how Mark and I met at some point, but today, as always, our topic is what comes next. Over to you, Mark, to introduce yourself and talk about whatever you want to talk about.
Sure. Hey, Tom. So the very famous football team I do support is Bolton Wanderers, for anyone
who wants one. Or as they say on the terracing, who are you?
Indeed. So yeah, coming to you from Las Vegas. I've been living here since 2013. Prior to that, living in Australia for 20 years, so my accent is a tad confused. Used to talk like Jon Snow, then talked a bit like Crocodile Dundee, and now I'm refining it both for the American audience. But yeah, really happy to be here. Thanks, Tom, for the invitation. So my background, I started off in England. I most prominently did a degree in management science at UMIST, which I loved because it was kind of like an undergraduate MBA. So I never actually did an MBA. I didn't think I needed to. Then I started my career working with Price Waterhouse, as it was then, now obviously PwC. Started in the audit business, then moved into corporate finance, then found my home in the consulting team, doing a lot of strategy work and project execution work across some of our global 100 customers. Worked in 9 different continents in 6 different industries. Six different continents in 9 different industries. Not a blast.
I think you've been to Mars at some point.
So thoroughly enjoyed myself working with PwC. Then I left PwC and went to work for our biggest client, which was a huge retailer in Australia, back then called Coles Myer, now called Wesfarmers. So the biggest employer in Australia, a huge conglomerate. It was a great opportunity. I was head of strategy and business development within the liquor group. So a lot of fun, learned a lot. Then I left and became the CEO of Wagamama in Australia. So then went from retail to hospitality, very similar processes between the two. Then I got an itch to start my own business and decided that I really wanted to do that. So I did. So I ended up launching the first pure play shoe retailer in Australia called Style Tread, which exited in 2016. And through that, actually came into contact with Tony Hsieh, who's the CEO of Zappos. And he invited me and my co-founder to come to Las Vegas to learn what we could about Zappos. So obviously took him up on that opportunity. And then when we sold the business, he then reached out again and said, hey, would you like to come and help me with my new venture, which is called the Downtown Project? So I jumped at that opportunity, came here to Las Vegas, spent 3 years working with the Downtown Project, ended up being the CEO of DTP Ventures, which was our kind of the arm of the business that managed all of the investments that we made through our various funds, plus managing the team of people that we had in Las Vegas, running some of the businesses that we operated ourselves. Then, after 3 years of doing that, I decided to venture off and do something else. So I, in a very similar vein, was working with startups and helping them with their businesses, coaching, mentoring, training, and facilitating stuff with them. And then I had an opportunity to work with the Air Force. So I met a bunch of people from the Pentagon at a bar in downtown Vegas, as you do, and had an opportunity to set up essentially an innovation cell within the Air Force based in Las Vegas. So we have a 26,000 square foot facility here in Las Vegas, which is where I'm sitting in right now. And a few levels above my head right now, we're actually running a workshop for revolutionizing flight line operations. Last week, we ran a workshop for Space Force to set up their innovation cell called Space Works. So it's been a fantastic opportunity to kind of take everything that I know from business world, facilitating, coaching, mentoring, helping people, and apply that then in a government environment, working with the military. I never thought in my wildest nightmares I would end up working with the government or working with a military organization, yet here I am, and actually thoroughly enjoying it. So that's a quick bit of background about me. The only other things I'll add is I'm a qualified accountant, a certified hypnotist, a master practitioner of NLP, and just about to finish my master's in applied positive psychology. So definitely, and I also did system dynamics at MIT for a bit as well. So very interested in ecosystems, humans, how to motivate humans, how to talk to humans, how to get humans to work together effectively.
Well, I don't normally do this, but I might as well just join the dots. But first of all, you have to remember the stand-up line you can use in front of professional services people. Because I'm a qualified accountant too. So we can just go, I'm a recovering chartered accountant. The first step is admitting you have a problem, with apologies to AA and NA members. So you and I
It did help me a lot though, Tom. It did help me a lot when I was trying to get funding for my startups. To say you're a qualified accountant, people tend to trust you more with your numbers because they believe that you are, even if you've never actually practiced it. It's interesting.
Well, I mean, I spent my 20s and most of my 30s, kind of the simplest thing is people would talk about Shark Tank in the US or Dragon's Den in the UK, and effectively just being a business angel and reading business models, which I think is an incredible grounding to be an accountant. That said, two of my adult sons, one's at EY, one's at PwC, is qualified accountants. So it's a great background, but I'm diverging. But you and I met through an interest in Frederick Laloux and reinventing organizations and self-organized businesses. So, and then we kind of worked together on founding the coaching arm in DTP Ventures, which was an amazing project. One of the most exhausting intensive weeks I've ever had in my whole life up in Vegas with you and the team at Rocketeer. And then I'm just fascinated by the idea of taking all of your thinking into a rather large organization, the US Air Force. How many people are in the US Air Force?
About 700,000.
Yeah, that's a pretty big org.
There's not many organizations big. Amazon, I think, is equal to the Air Force. But there's not too many organizations in the world bigger than the US Air Force.
So, we could talk about anything. Other than Bolton Wanderers.
Well, the one thing, just to tie the dots a little bit as well, what really interested me to come here to work with the Air Force. So as Tom said, our passion was around how is it that you get people in large organizations to work together more effectively. One of the things that when I first started hanging out with Tony Shea and sitting down at the campfire, having a drink and just talking about stuff, one of the things that kept coming up with Tony as a recurring theme was this real desire by him to try and understand how to do what I'm about to say. So the challenge that he set for himself was, why is it that when a city increases in size, innovation per capita increases? When an organization increases in size, typically innovation per capita decreases.
Yeah.
They're both collections of humans, but for one, as it gets bigger, it gets more diverse, it gets more exciting and greater things happen. And then the other one seems to get more bureaucratic and then, really hurt people from actually collaborating with each other and working together on wicked problems. So that burning desire in me was also something I thought was really fascinating. So then for me, it was like, okay, I really want to try and figure out what's this holy grail of how do you get large organizations to be just as entrepreneurial as a startup? Like, what is it that happens inside a large organization that prevents that from happening? So when I was given the opportunity to work with the Air Force, 700,000 people, I jumped at the opportunity because I was like, wow, I'm probably never going to get another opportunity like this in my career to work with such a large organization. And it's a great organization, a lot of history, great brand, lots of great new young talent joining it every single year. So I thought, what a tremendous opportunity to kind of see if we could figure this out. We did get a vanity metric last year, which was a nice booster for our ego a little bit, but didn't, it's just a nice vanity metric, where we were actually labeled by Fast Company as the 16th most innovative workplace in the world. So for a project where we were trying to turn the Air Force into one that was a little bit more innovative, at least within our team, within our organization of AFWorks, we did get that kind of vanity metric, which was a nice, just little motivation boost for everybody. And the next challenge then is, how do you get the Air Force as a whole to win that title, not just the innovation cell within the Air Force?
Okay. So what's your focus now?
Yeah, so what's next? So when Tom said I love the idea of what's next, and it just opens up to, lots of different conversation flow. And we could talk about 1,000 different things. But when I woke up this morning, the thing that's been on my mind for the last 3 weeks, and it's definitely prevalent, I think, for a lot of people, is what happens next? Now we're in this kind of hopefully post-COVID world, or getting close to it. In America, it feels like we're in post-COVID. we're in this post-COVID world. How do we work effectively together? And I'm gonna define it a little bit tightly, as in workshops, in events, in how do you get collections of people to work together on a common problem? You know, maybe it's a sprint, maybe it's we just want to explore this problem and try and find solutions to it. So just to kind of give a little bit more flavor to that, and I'm very big on beliefs and, you know, trying to really get to the root cause motivation of humans. So I'll just play what was going through my mind this morning as I was driving into work. So pre-pandemic, my belief set around workshops was you had to be in the room. I didn't allow anyone to dial in.
Yeah.
I didn't allow anyone to join by Zoom. If you wanted to take part in the event that we were doing, whether it was a design thinking workshop, a sprint, we just said to people, you have to be here. And people did. And people flew from all over the world to come to Las Vegas to work on a project for a few days. The other belief that we had around that pre-pandemic was you have to try and make the event as small a day as possible. Because people are flying in and everyone's really busy and they've got families they need to get back to, and you know, flights are expensive and hotel rooms are expensive. So we tried to really shrink down the work into as few days as possible. And our belief around the benefit of that was, you know, you make a stronger connection with people when you're together in a room. You can work on projects faster, and it's incredibly distracting to have someone dialing in and not being able to really engage. And so that was our belief set pre-COVID. Then COVID happened, obviously threw the world into a tailspin. Very quickly, we were lucky. We're a team of people that just love trying to find solutions to problems. So this was just a juicy problem. Hey, we can't actually do in-person events anymore, but we want to still do our work. We have no idea how long this is going to last. We assume it's going to last at least 6 months. We do not want to pause our work for 6 months. So what do we do? We have to figure it out. So we found ways of doing virtual events and virtual workshops. We leverage Zoom and breakout rooms in Zoom. We use tools like Miro or Mural to create an online collaborative workspace where people could actually collaborate with each other. We then realized, wow, there's all these benefits to a virtual event. People aren't flying in. They're not having to stay in a hotel. We don't have to shrink the workshop down into as few days as possible. We could spread this out. We could have 2 hours a day over 2 weeks. We could invite different people on different days. So there's all these benefits now of actually doing a virtual-only workshop that we'd never considered before. So then we did virtual. Now, for the last 3 weeks, all I've been doing is hybrid events.
Okay.
So I've been working. So upstairs right now, we have 45 people physically in a workshop and 80 people virtually on Zoom. So now we're trying to figure out, okay, what do we need to do? So our beliefs now are we need to create an environment for people where it's just as good an experience for the people coming in on Zoom as it is for the people physically in the hub. We need to create maybe some sessions where it's in-person only working on stuff because it's nicer for them, and virtual only working on stuff. And then there's other things we need to integrate together. So we've realized within our hybrid event, we have two events kind of happening. One is what we're calling the two-in-one event, where there's a piece of work going on in-person only and virtual only. Mm-hmm. And then at other times, we're calling that an integrated event, where we've actually got breakout rooms set up with laptops in the room, with great webcams, with great microphones, great cameras, where people can actually work together on a mirror board working on the same problem. And then we have, in our plenary sessions, we bring everyone together. We've got 5 different camera setups, lots of microphones. Again, so now we're basically running a TV studio. So it's twice as hard to do it, but we believe that hybrid is obviously going to be the future for at least the next couple of years. As people, some people maybe don't want to travel anymore. Some people, from a cost perspective, choose not to travel anymore. But we want to get everyone together to work. So I guess I just wanted to share that my belief system around this, and I think the belief systems of all the people that we're working with has gone through radical change in the last 18 months. To where we are today. So yeah, that's what's next for me is how to continue with this kind of hybrid workflow and making sure it's a great experience for everyone, and we get a great outcome depending on what project we're working on.
Very cool. Let me just reflect a couple of things listening to you, as you and I do, bounce off each other. First of all, I've written 1,300 plus days in a row now on my blog, and you realize themes recur. And one of them is the power of constraints in different ways. So in engineering, and now they use it everywhere, is the idea of sprints and stuff like that. But you know, you put a little boundary around this conversation, which is cool, around events and workshops. And I do find it interesting. I've been involved with many events, as you will have been, in the last 14 months, which are different because of the pandemic. And two come to mind. One is that there was one where there was a small group of less than 10 people, and two of them, they got to the point where in the summer last year in the UK, people could kind of get together a little bit. And they said, okay, with enough space in the office, we can come into the office. But two of them were shielding, so they couldn't come in. And I kind of made the decision for that particular group. I said, it doesn't work. It's really disruptive to have two people dialing in. So everybody dial in. Now, that would never have happened before the pandemic. They would have said, well, they can just opt out, right? But we said, no, it's better if everybody dials in. So I like, you know, perhaps one of the things you're looking at as well as workshops is like everybody in breakout rooms on Zoom, even if they're in the room, is one of the options, right? The other one is I had a client last year who was pulling together a global leadership team for their role as a CEO. And they said, well, you know, there's seven of us and three of them are new in the last 4 months and none of us have met and we're from all over the world. I said, what would you normally do? And it's a bunch of senior execs. I said, well, we'd fly them all in somewhere and we'd have them for 3 or 4 days and we'd start out with a dinner so we can like break the ice and get to know each other. And then lifting the beliefs are you have to do it together, right? But the conversation is, what are we looking to gain from this bringing people together? And that's always the go back to first principles, what's that all about? And what was fascinating is we you know, this was being done with walk and talks virtually. Like I was walking around a park in one part of the world, they were walking around a park in the other part of the world. And we spent a couple of hours thinking about it and we got to first principles. And then over the next few weeks, we developed an idea where what we ended up doing was saying over the course of 8 sessions, we would achieve the same thing completely virtually, right? And the first dinner, like opening night dinner event, what was that about? What was the next thing? And you set the course across it and you build it out. And it was effectively, it was kind of mandatory attendance, or no matter what time zone you're on, for 2 hours, once a week. And we put a lot of time into, and this is one of the things I have learned, I'm sure you may have picked up the same thing, is to run an online event takes a ton more prep and planning than to run an in-person event. You've got to get the tech right, you've got to get the prep right, you've got to, you know, you have even less PowerPoint slides, which is, you know, most people would say thank you very much. But it was amazing because they
I will add, a hybrid event is twice as hard.
Right, and so we're going to come back to that because you know, just first of all, the online only was, I found some amazing benefits, but it does come back to what are you looking to achieve from it. So the hybrid event, I mean, you're talking about a TV studio, so that's, it's all fascinating. And I will
start. You're adding an in-person event, which I would agree is easier to run with a virtual event, which requires a lot more prep. But then when you do the two together, It's a heck of a lot harder.
So to break through your boundary a little bit, and what I talked about beforehand, one of the core topics that countries that have got fast vaccination, like US, UK, which are the primary people who will listen to this on podcast, my biggest audience is from those two countries. They're looking at post COVID and going back to work, and so there's a whole bunch of belief patterns that aren't being questioned. Whole idea of an office. So, you know, just drop it in there. My idea is WFA of work from anywhere. So, but it's really, what does the organization need as the container, right? Yep. Well, it needs motivated staff and it needs humans who want to innovate. And we won't get to your core question today, which is just this, your Tony and Mark question of the larger the org, why does it innovate less? But if we say, what's the purpose of the organization, both in terms of what does it add to the community, profit, shareholders, et cetera, and what's the best way to achieve that? This hybrid, to drop it back into your space, if people could be open enough to go, there are new opportunities from this post-COVID world, right? And it's not one or the other, because it seems to be a binary proposition. The proponents of remote working are going, there's no such thing as hybrid. Literally, there's a guy with a vested interest in one of the larger companies providing remote work, just on Twitter going, there's no such thing as hybrid. I'm going, that's a really sort of binary conversation. It's either remote or office, and it's not. And it's, I would say that.
As I started this conversation with, it was, that was my belief before COVID.
Yeah.
You're either in here in the workshop or you're not.
Yeah. Yeah.
And one of the opportunities of COVID has opened up to us that, well, no, there's all this value of. And now when we're in this post-COVID world, it's okay. Now we're like, okay, we can't go back to in-person only for a bunch of different reasons that we all know. And we probably don't really just want to go virtual only. So hybrid is the reality, whether we like it or not. It is the reality. We're grappling with that from people in my team that said, do you know what? That 20-minute commute doesn't really do anything for me. I think I'd rather just stay home and work from home. And, you know, I don't really need to be in the office. And what we've said is there's certain times when that is true, that you do not. However, obviously, when we've got 100 people in our hub doing a workshop, that is not one of those times that we need you here. We need you, you know, we need you physically here. We need you to open doors. We need you to greet people. We need you to facilitate a session with stickies and whiteboards, actual real stickies, not imaginary ones on mural boards.
Yes. Well, I mean, my premise is the platinum rule. So the golden rule being treat people the way you wish to be treated. And I was just coming to today, somebody was putting online that Richard Branson says that. I said, not to say that Sir Richard's wrong, but I will, and say, actually, what about upgrading to the platinum rule, which is treat people the way they wish to be treated, all which requires more empathy than even the golden rule. But the caveat is quite hard-nosed, is what does the organization need, which is what you're actually talking about. So this clearly, if people can, if more and more leaders can open their mind to the fact that it's not going to be the same, I highlight the line that a client shared with me that they heard from a young teenager who said, I don't want to go back to the way it was before. Like go back to normal, we're talking about. Actually, I want to go back to better, which I love the idea of going back to better, because you go, well, it kind of feels a little bit like energetically, like you're pulling a catapult back with a go back and you're letting it go. So you take what did we have before, but can we propel it into the future? I'm sure with Space Force and other brilliantly cool things you've got jet propulsion labs and stuff. Right? So how do we go back to better? And your idea of hybrid and what you just described about the workshops you're running in the building right now is a fantastic thing for
language has to change. Mm-hmm. So we need new language, and we need to be careful not to use inappropriate language. I'll give you an example. So one of the things I love, so pre-COVID, you get all these people together in a physical space. Everybody's in exactly the same time zone. It doesn't matter what time zone they live in. When they come to the workshop, they're in your time zone. So you have breakfast when breakfast is, lunch when lunch is, dinner when dinner is. In a virtual setting, you have no idea where anybody is. Some people could be in Australia in their time zone. Some people could be in the UK. Some people could be on the East Coast of America. Some people could be on the West Coast of America. Mm-hmm. So we had to then change our thinking about when is the workshop going to start and stop. Mm-hmm. We're not going to do an 8-hour workshop because that would just be impractical for all these people in all these different time zones. So let's maybe do a 4-hour workshop over multiple days instead. And you don't need to ever mention lunch because you have no idea what time zone anybody's in. Then you do hybrid, and I've got 50 people here in Las Vegas. Lunch is going to be at 12:30, but lunch is not going to be at 12:30 for all my virtual participants. So then it's best not to mention the lunch word as a break. And so what we've had to do is design in various different breaks to take into account that, yeah, some people are going to be in the UK, some people are going to be on the East Coast of America, some people are going to be on the West Coast with us. So even just being conscious of the language you're using. Now, even just saying to everybody, hey, I hope you have a nice lunch, that could be completely inappropriate to half the people. You've just now alienated half the people in your gathering. Even just little things like that, we've noticed we have to be ready for to be able to do this. And another thing was the in-person, when you're in a room with 100 people and someone starts speaking, you can literally look around the room and see whose face is it that's mouth is moving.
Yeah.
Who is speaking? And as you know, the majority of communication is not the words that are used.
Yes.
It's the nonverbal cues. So when you're in a room, it's very easier to kind of pick up on some of those nonverbal cues. You can see the hand movement. You can see the facial expression. Virtually, all we ever see is this kind of view of the human, just see their face, mm-hmm. typically, if they've got their camera on. You don't get that same vibe as you would if you were in person. So what we've tried to do with our TV studio is essentially make sure that in a room, when everyone's sitting in the same room and there's, 50 to 100 people sitting in a room in Las Vegas and another 100 people online, making sure that the camera zooms in on the face of the person speaking. So the person online knows who's speaking and what's their facial expression. Because in a virtual only, we get that view. 200 people in a Zoom meeting, whoever's speaking, the spotlight is on their camera, their face. You can see who is talking. In person only, same thing. Hybrid, all these extra complications now I want to be able to see the mouth movement of the person speaking and hear them clearly. So now you have to have multiple microphones, multiple cameras. It just adds that extra level of complication to do it right, to give an amazing experience to everyone.
But most of the audience when we do this each week listens to it on audio, so they won't see me grinning, because I'm amused by the fact that what you're actually looking to replicate by zooming in is the Zoom experience, not the in-person experience, because we've learned that you can have that complete focus on one individual and just see their head and shoulders.
We zoom in and we at least we show the body. Giving the same experience.
But I mean, the diversity of communication is one of the things I've also thought is brought, somebody who does facilitate events and stuff as well. I've learned a lot from this experience and found, for example, that people who are more introverted love breakout rooms, right? And particularly, nice small ones, no more than 3 or 4 people, because they feel they can share and it feels more private and they don't feel they have to put their hand up and be the extrovert who wants to put their hand up in class.
And they love writing on stickies where they don't even have to speak.
And I went to an event a few months before the pandemic, where each table had an artist at it. And we were at the diversity and inclusion group, right, for a couple of days. And of course, what did a whole bunch of us, including me, start to do in the first hour? We wanted to define what we meant by the words. And then the artist put her hand up. She says, "I'm a dancer. I'm profoundly dyslexic. I feel completely excluded from this conversation." We ended up presenting back to the plenary session in movement.
That's awesome.
At an in-person event for about 120 people who had flown in from all over the world for this, that worked beautifully. And so it's like this, the whole idea of hybrid, if we go with a standpoint of let go of all the self-limiting organizational beliefs, and what are we looking to achieve from coming together? What might that look like? I just think that we've kept a relatively constrained by your and my standards, because we can go anywhere, conversation. And I'm very passionate about the idea of the platinum rule linked to organizations. Treat people the way they want to be treated. Some want to work from home 5 days a week. Some want to come in 5 days a week. What might that look like? And I think by discussing the idea of hybrid events, hybrid workshops, hopefully this gives pause to people who want to go back to the way it was before or keep it at all remote and actually go the not just the reality, but the breadth and depth of opportunity that comes with taking the best of both and going back to better. Exactly. So the hybrid, and we won't even, the cool thing is we won't even talk about it as being hybrid in 3 years from now.
No.
It'll just be the way we do things.
It's like we don't say e-commerce anymore.
Well, you earlier on you said pure play, so the historical piece was the first online only shoe store in Australia, right? So we got it. There's all that code which lay people don't necessarily speak if they're not in the tech world. I only know enough to be dangerous. Or in America, as they would say, I did stay in Holiday Inn Express last night, but there's an ad that doesn't translate across borders. Okay, Mark, I'll honor your time. We always do these half hour conversations, which means I don't have to do any production on the podcast other than bang it up there. And And again, this is the sort of hybrid world a little bit, because podcasts have gone crazy. This is the kind of conversation you and I would have in person, except we'd probably be in downtown Las Vegas years ago, and we would have gone on for about 6 hours. But half hour created a nice little boundary. It was a pleasure to see you, and I encourage people to look at the video, to see your smiling face and your swing the pendulum to let's go crazy haircut that you got after the first pandemic haircut. So.
No haircut for a year. That was mine. I got a nice ponytail, man.
So, and with that, as I like to do, I'll thank you very much for coming on, and I'll let you have some closing words.
Sure. Thanks, Tom. No, thanks. I mean, this is, I love what Tom's doing. Like I said, I think it really opens up the aperture of conversation, and hopefully you have learned a little bit about the challenges and opportunities of moving into this kind of hybrid world that we are, I am sure, going to be reveling in for at least the next couple of years, I think. So thanks for the opportunity to share some thoughts.
As they say in Morecambe and Wise, for those of British of a certain age, it's good night from me and it's good night from him.